Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, I'm at the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's been an interesting week, and of course, all the buzz is always about franchise sales. So it really is good that we have today as our guest, Mark Kirsch, a partner at Play Cook, and we'll be talking about franchise sales outsourcing. Also joining me today is co-producer Joe Caruso from the great state of Maryland. Joe, good morning. How are you today?
Fantastic, Paul. It's a great day to be on the radio because it's kind of ugly outside.
There you go. And I said good morning. I'm over here in Vegas. It's 9 a.m., 11 a.m. Central, and, of course, it's noon back east. Joe, as we are now in our third week of our third annual Franchise Legal Series on Franchise Today, tell us a little bit about what we can expect in weeks 4 through 7.
Well, we've got Warren Lewis joining us next Thursday, and Warren, who has wrote a terrific book for franchise practitioners, lay people that need to have a clear understanding of compliance, the Franchise Seller's Handbook, is going to be talking about franchise compliance basics and earnings claims. Following that, we'll have a show on litigation and technology in franchising. It's complicated, with Ken Prine, who's an attorney with Redgrave PLC. And then following that will be the dynamics of winning franchisee-franchisor relationships with Michael Webster, who is a Toronto-based franchise attorney and also the chairman of the National Association of Franchisees. And then our conclusion of the series will be, what do franchise lawyers talk about at a recap of the 2012 IFA Legal Symposium?
Well, we've got certainly a lot of information to cover. A recap, we started the series 3 weeks ago, our third series, and we had Lane Fisher talk about private equity and franchising. And last week we had Lee Playvon talking about social media and technology and franchising, two great shows. And, of course, all shows on Franchise Today are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Well, our guest this morning on Franchise Today is Mark Kirsch, as I said. He's a partner at Play Cook PLC, a Reston, Virginia-based franchise law firm. And after over 20 years practicing franchise law at a massive multinational 3,500 lawyer law firm, Mark made the entrepreneurial leap and joined several of his former partners in a small boutique 11-lawyer firm, Play Cook. His practice focuses on domestic and international franchise license and distribution matters across a wide range of industries, including restaurants, hotels, retail, business services, healthcare, product manufacturing, and personnel services. His clients cover the spectrum from first-time startup franchisor to national franchisors and multinational companies. Mark, welcome to Franchise Today.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
You know, it's really great talking with the partners at Play Cook, because I'm always enamored with franchise law with Zing. And of course, Leslie Curran from your firm has been on the show in the past, as well as, of course, the co-founding partner of Play Cook, Lee Plave, and always ask the question, you know, in their minds, you know, what's the what's franchise law with Zing? And I would love to hear your perspective on it.
Franchise law with Zing is having fun practicing franchise law, doing things with an entrepreneurial spirit, with a freshness, and with a little different approach that makes it fun for the lawyers and hopefully fun for the clients. That's what the Zing is. It's not business as usual.
Well, that's, you know, absolutely great. You know, as I said at the top of the show, I am reporting live from the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference here in Las Vegas, put on by Franchise Update Media Group. And it's really been a great event. Of course, you know, all the buzz, especially as the economy seems to be getting just a wee bit better, and hopefully with the upcoming election, it won't take a turnaround and about face, if you would. But, you know, the prospects, the projections for the future seem to be brighter than they have been in the last couple of years. And of course, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, franchise sales. How do we grow again? And it's really been interesting listening to the perspective of the various multi-unit franchisees. You know, some of them actually considerably larger than many franchisors. I got the pleasure of listening to Nigel Travis, the CEO of Dunkin' Donuts, the other night. Talked with Steve Caldera last night here at the show. Of course, many attorneys, many financial people as well. And it's really a nice glimmer of optimism looking forward. And, of course, you know, franchise sales is really going to be the key to it. And our topic today is leveraging franchise sales outsourcing, you know, safety and vigilance. And it's really interesting because, Mark, you and I had a couple of communications earlier about, you know, the title. You know, leveraging franchise sales outsourcing, safety and vigilance, or should it be safety and vigilance, leveraging franchise sales and outsourcing? And you know, to me, it seems to be just a matter of, you know, one's objective. But, you know, really, if you look at it in two different ways, they really don't mean the same. And I think that's because, you know, where is the priority? And so I'm curious just to get your take on why you thought safety and vigilance should be at the end or, as we had originally put it out there, at the beginning.
Well, I think the first part of it is that franchisors, you know, to be successful, I mean, they have to have good operating companies and good operating units. And then as they expand, they have to sell franchises. And obviously we wouldn't be talking about this if we weren't talking about franchise sales. And so the key is, all right, how do we, as franchisors, make sales? And there's a lot of ways to do it. And then the next question is, how do we do it right? How do we do it well? As opposed to saying it's a big issue, the safety and vigilance is the critical issue. Well, it is critical. It's really the franchise sales is critical, and then let's see how we do it right without stepping into problems.
Well, I know you've had a conversation earlier today with our co-producer, Joe Caruso. And, you know, Joe and I have had, you know, hours upon hours of discussions about franchise best practices, especially as it relates to franchise sales and development and the use of outsourced companies, dealing with brokers, consultants, et cetera. So in my view, this is one of the most least understood areas, but also a very common functional aspect of franchising. And maybe we should start at the beginning with some definitional terms to set the table for our discussion today. So right off the bat, you know, how do you define, or better yet, you know, what is franchise sales outsourcing?
Okay, well, that's a good question, because there's a lot of different terms in franchising, as you know, as well as what different companies utilize, what different individuals utilize, and actually what the law, what the federal and state laws utilize for these sorts of things. But in a very broad sense, what is franchise sales outsourcing? Franchise sales outsourcing is a franchisor that is using someone else that's not part of their organization to do their franchise sales and development. That's on a very broad level. All right, so it could be like everything, like any other business. You could simply say, okay, I've got someone who's going to do my training. I've got someone who's going to do my operations. I'm going to have someone who's going to do my site selection. And I have someone in my in-house who's going to do franchise sales. All right. But then some companies say, well, wait a second. You know, I don't know if I have the right people. I don't know how much it's going to cost. And we can probably talk about that, you know, later today. But outsourcing is just that, saying, I don't want to take it on my balance sheet. I don't want it to be my expense, at least on an ongoing basis, and I want to be able to hire somebody else. And so that's generally what franchise sales outsourcing is. But the real next question becomes, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, who does this? And there's a term that's been used a lot in franchising, that's franchise broker, franchise sales broker. And that can mean a lot of different things. As for example, it could just be an independent person who's good at business sales, who is an independent contractor, and simply says, okay, I will represent you, Mr. Franchisor, and your brand trying to sell franchises. That's a broker, okay? It could be one, it could be two, it could be three, it could be a dozen people who are part of an organization. All right, that's one type of outsource franchise broker. The next one is what I would call a referral network. And instead of the broker getting heavily involved in that particular brand, it could be a group of, and they have them now, 100, 200, 300 brokers, business brokers around the country that are more along the lines of a referral network. They should know about the franchise company that they're representing, but they're not heavily involved in the whole process of franchise sales, and so they're more a lead generation. There are also brokers who get more involved in the franchise sales process, where they represent the franchisor, they hand out the disclosure documents, they talk to the prospects, they qualify the prospects, you make sure they meet the franchisor's requirements. And then there's some that even go further and help with all the way through contract signing, and some of them may do more like what I'll call post-signing support and pre-sale, pre-opening support. So there's a variety of range of franchise brokers and franchise salespeople. There's something else we can get into a little bit later. What is an area representative or an area developer? But that's kind of a broad approach.
Well, you know, a while back I wrote a article about all the different terminology used in franchising and how so many of them are interchangeable and some obviously have just slight variations, as you touched upon, with different responsibilities and duties. But really, it seems to be very confusing, especially to the person on the outside looking in, and certainly for franchise candidates. And it seems like there should be some type of uniformity. I mean, after all, franchising is all about, you know, replication and uniformity across the board from one area to the other, but yet we don't seem like we practice what we preach. And again, you know, Joe and I have had, you know, numerous conversations about that, and we joke at times, you know, at how it appears that there are some, and I'll use the term lightly, professionals out there that try to hide behind, you know, certain terminology and say, well, that's not my responsibility, we do this, and of course it seems like they're skating a lot on some of the whether they're abiding by or breaking, you know, different franchise disclosure rules and laws. And you know, who knows where this is going to shake out, but it is where we are today, and it is something that we're dealing with, and it's obviously the reason for, you know, this type of show. So, you know, we have franchise consultants, we have coaches, we have mentors, we have advisors, we have, you know, as you said, you know, area representatives, there are many that call them agents. What's your perspective about, you know, just from the outside looking in, there just being so many different positions out there? Is it confusing, you know? How do you think, you know, with your experience with, you know, regulatory agencies, you know, how do they look at something like this?
Well, that's another good question. I mean, there are some terminologies, and I for one am not as concerned about what different entities call different positions, because it's kind of like, you know, a rose is a rose is a rose, or, you know, and if someone is operating as in the franchise sales arena, you know, you can call them a development agent, you can call them a broker, you can call them a salesperson. They're still doing franchise sales, and so, you know, we may want to call them a broker. But there are legal. I will say this: there are the law has changed. I mean, there's the Federal Trade Commission's trade regulation rule on franchising, the franchise rule, and there's the state franchise laws. You know, there used to be terms for franchise brokers and franchise salespeople. Now the terminology that's being used is a franchise seller. Now, a franchise seller is both the franchisor, the executives of the franchisor that are involved in franchise sales and development, as well as independent third-party brokers, agents, et cetera, that are involved in franchise sales, people who sign a contract and are paid some, not necessarily sign a contract, but are paid some commission for promoting the sale or arranging the sale of a franchise. And so it's helpful, it's not so much, it's helpful for everyone, but it's the more important thing is for every person to understand what their role is, both the broker, salesman, agent, okay, and the person with whom they're dealing, the prospective franchisee. And that's really one of the most critical things here, because as a franchisor and a brand, what you want to do is communicate as well as possible to your prospect about your brand and about who's working, et cetera. And so it's important that the broker or the agent is representing himself and herself properly, is representing the brand properly. So the terminology will change. You know, some people just use different terminology. You know, some people say, well, our folks are development agents and our folks are franchise brokers. Well, it's more important to figure out what they are than what their name is. And if you will, I can talk now, we're going to talk later a little about how the states and the FTC regulate these franchise brokers.
Well, let's hold that for a second.
Okay.
Because, you know, I have some of my own ideas about this next question, and I know Joe does as well. So what I'd like to do first is hear your thoughts on this, and then I'd like to bring Joe back and get some of his thoughts as well. And basically it's on, you know, why a new or established franchisor would even consider outsourcing franchise sales to brokers. And, of course, in your opinion, and also like to hear Joe's opinion, you know, what are the benefits in doing so?
Sure. When most franchisors start up, and let's just talk about the startup franchises, they have, in many cases, developed a pretty good business, whether it's they've got 6 or 10 restaurants or retail stores. But their focus is on operations, and they say, okay, I now want to expand. So what do I need to expand? And they may have a franchise consultant. They may have a franchise lawyer. I hope they would if they're going to do an FDD and agreements. But, and they're going to learn how to change their model of business from being an operator to being a franchisor, from being an operator to being an administrator. And they probably have people on staff that are good at operations or good at menu development or et cetera, good at site selection. But they may not have people on staff who are good at franchise sales. They've never had to sell a franchise. They've only had to sell their services or their product in their business. And so it takes a certain skill to sell franchises. I mean, as you know, you can sell software, you can sell shoes, but it doesn't mean you can sell franchises. So one reason to outsource is to get someone who has the knowledge and experience in franchise sales and development. People who understand what franchising is about, people who understand how a franchisee or a prospective franchisee thinks and is able to speak the language of franchising. And so you could hire someone as your franchise salesperson or vice president of franchise sales or franchise development manager, and I use those because those are terms that franchisors use. You can hire someone in-house, but what that does, it means that person's salary is on your books and you're paying that person, you know, month after month, whether he or she sells one franchise or 100 franchises. The thing about the brokers or broker networks is that you're only paying when someone either brings you a lead or you're only paying when you close a deal. And so it reduces your overall cost. And so it lets you focus on the business, and you hire someone or you retain someone, so it's really not an employee hire, to do what they do well. That's the upside. It keeps some of your initial startup costs and ongoing operational costs as a franchisor down. The downside is you got to make sure that you have the right person, the person who is committed to your brand, the person who is knowledgeable, the person who understands what you're trying to do. And some of the downsides with franchise brokers or independent franchise salespeople is that there's a tension between, and I may call it a conflict, but let's just call it a tension for now, between their desire to make a sale, close a deal, and get paid, and the franchisor's desire to make sure they have the best franchisee, the most well-informed franchisee, the one who's most qualified to operate their business. And so there are people out there who maybe are not the best franchise salespeople, but they'll bring you leads, but they may not get you the best leads. So there's a downside there. There's some other downsides in terms of what these people say and do. Let me turn to you, Paul or Joe, and what your thoughts on the pluses and minuses.
Yeah, we'll definitely discuss some of the potential consequences. Joe, your experience, you've run several large national brands. You've been responsible for, you know, franchise sales and development at some others. And I know you have a different work, a perspective of your own. And what I'd like to do from your experience and what you're seeing out there today, I'd like you to answer that same question. As Mark just did, you know, basically, you know, why a new or established franchisor would consider outsourcing franchise sales to brokers?
Well, I think that Mark makes a really good point that if you have limited capital in the franchisor, devoting it to a salary may not be the best investment. But I also think it varies to the different kinds of franchises that are out there and the investment levels and the complexity. Also, the aspect of are you hiring or are you engaging a franchise sales outsource provider, be it a broker or a network or an organization, are you engaging them because they generate leads and they become your lead generation? Or are you bringing them in for their functional expertise, and are you going to continue your lead generation efforts? If you have service businesses and you want to use a broker network that's going to find individuals that want to open up something that is a franchise concept that can go into business in 60 days or less, I think you could have a great deal of success using brokers. On the other hand, if you have a very capital-intensive operation, a multi-million-dollar project each unit where site selection and the time frame for development is kind of expansive. I mean, if it takes 18 months to be able to get open, and you're talking about bringing down real estate and building out a large facility, I'm not sure that a lot of to provide those services. There are some, but there's nearly not as many that can help with those service businesses. And again, is the broker engaged as a functional expert to be able to facilitate development, or are they brought in as really lead generation and a referral agent to help grow the franchisor? So I think it really depends, and the franchisor needs to decide what it's looking for. I think one of the downsides of using referral brokers and franchise sales outsources is it can be limiting. Your pool of candidates is limited to the sphere of influence of some of those brokers if they're really outsourced lead generation. And you may not be getting the right kind of people for your system if you defined a particular profile that you're looking for. So
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
There's a lot of factors there.
Yeah. Let me chime in and follow up on what Joe said, because there are some limitations on that. And, you know, there are some broker networks that are wide-ranging broker networks, you know, and their referrals. But they may also represent more than one brand. And so one of the things as a franchisor you need to know is, are they only representing you? Are they only representing you in your particular industry? And they're only going to handle one sandwich restaurant chain and one pizza restaurant chain and one educational chain, et cetera. And then who are their prospective targets? So I agree with Joe. In some cases, they can cast a pretty broad net. But then the downside is, well, how are they really reviewing and vetting those particular prospects? Are they going to be, and the people they talk to who may be good prospects for Pizza Chain X, are they going to be good prospects for your retail store chain Y? So it's incumbent upon the franchisor to do its due diligence about what sort of network they're getting. Related to this, and there are certain brokers and broker networks and sales agents that kind of work in a tiered structure where the franchisor may retain a particular broker, and I'll call them almost like a general contractor. You know, they're going to handle a lot of things, and then they're going to use broker networks. And the franchisor, this is another downside, has to pay everybody along the way. So you don't pay anyone until a franchise sale is made, but you're going to pay a certain percentage of your sale to the referring network who referred the lead, and then you're going to pay another percentage of that franchise sale to the general contractor sales development agent who's done a lot more vetting, helps explain the system, you know, is more of your front man, if you will. And at the end of the day, I've seen situations where at the end of the franchise sale, the franchisor only takes in maybe 20% to 30% of its normal franchise fee. And so there's a big cost to using these networks. I'm not saying it's bad, but a franchisor has to understand what it's going to cost and how much money they're going to put in their pocket at the end of the day after the franchise sale is made.
Yeah, I think, cost, as Joe also mentioned, some of the startup franchisors don't have the necessary capital, so this is a good way of kind of deferring some of those expenses. But obviously a pay me now, pay me later type of situation. But the thing that, I look at, and I think, Mark, you hit on this, and Joe, you did as well, I mean, it really takes the franchisor being involved in the process. And to that end, franchisors oftentimes say managing franchisees is like herding cats, and in some respects with franchise brokers, it might be more like blind mouse trying to herd cats. So how does a franchisor, Mark, ensure that the broker will represent the brand well?
That's a good question, and that goes back to preparation, all right? And it's a matter of the first thing I would tell a franchisor is understand what you're trying to accomplish. Are you just trying to get leads? Or are you trying to truly outsource almost all of the development function? That's number one. Number two is interview the broker or broker network or organizations that you're dealing with. All right, get out, understand who they are, what they do, what they've done in the past, and if they understand your business. See if you can get an exclusive as to your industry. That's what I was mentioning before. So they're only handling your burger franchise or your hair cutting franchise. All right. One of the things that you'd also want to do is review each individual broker's background, each sales agent's background. How do you get that? Well, there are going to be forms that they're going to have to fill out for you as part of the franchise registration process. So, and it talks about their experience, and not just general experience, but their franchise experience. It talks about their any sort of litigation, bankruptcy. So you want to do a lot of checks to see if they understand what they're supposed to do and if they've been in compliance with franchise laws in the past. The next thing to do, and this is real critical, you need to train the broker on your franchise system. All right? Just because they've sold another burger or sandwich chain franchise doesn't mean that they understand what's important to you. It doesn't mean that they understand exactly what your brand is looking for in a prospect. So you want to train them on your system because they're going to be the face of your franchise to prospects. So not only do they want to look good, look presentable, but they want to be able to tell the story that you want to tell. Next thing is you want to train these franchise sales folks on franchise law compliance. There's a lot of ways that franchisors and their employees and their franchise development agents or salespeople could cross the line between legal and illegal franchise law compliance in terms of giving out unauthorized earnings claims or financial performance representations, or just saying the wrong thing, or not selling in a state when the company's not registered. So it's a matter of franchise law compliance, and I recommend to many of my clients that they do these compliance programs on a regular basis. Just because someone has gone through a compliance program or may even be a certified franchise executive from the IFA, which is another good program, you need to have refresher courses the same way you have refresher training in any business. And then the last part of this, to try to make sure you're getting what you want to get and that you're not going to cross over too many lines, is sign an engagement or retainer agreement with the franchise broker or the sales agents that are very clear as to the duties, as to your duties, as to their duties, as their compliance issues. And I could go through a list of what might be in a contract with a broker. But it's like any other contract. It's important to put down what they're going to do, what you're going to do, and what the expectations of the parties are, so everyone knows up front. So that's part of the process. You may still have problems, you still may have hiccups. And so the next part of it is you need to be vigilant in your surveillance. And what I mean by that is you check up on your franchise brokers. You use certain forms, and there's a form that many franchisors use in their FDD. Some people call it a franchise compliance form. Some call it a franchisee certification. But it's the form that franchisees will usually sign right when they sign the franchise agreement that acknowledges that they received the FDD on time, that they reviewed it, that no one told them, gave them unauthorized earnings claims, et cetera, et cetera. You review those documents, and if there are any problems, you got to go back to your franchise development staff and say, what happened here? So, and then there's also, you can do what I would call secret shopper. You can also have a person pose as a potential franchisee, and see what the franchise sales process is.
We're at Franchise Today. We're broadcasting live from the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference in Las Vegas. And my guest today is Mark Kirsch, partner at Plave Cook, and my co-producer Joe Caruso is on the line as well. And we're talking leveraging franchise sales outsourcing, safety, and vigilance. Joe, why don't you take the next question for Mark?
Yeah, Mark, Paul and I have great relationships with folks like you within the franchise legal community. And a common concern that we hear expressed by franchise attorneys is that their franchise or clients sometimes enter into broker relationships a little bit too casually. What are the recommended practices for vetting and establishing franchise sales outsourcing programs?
All right. Well, and part of it was, as your question says, it's vetting. It's understanding who you're getting in bed with, and whoever you sign up is, as I said, the face of your franchise, and that's going to be who is going to be representing your franchise to prospective franchisees. One way is, as part of the vetting process, is just getting references, referrals. I mean, the franchise community, as big as it is and as broad as it is, it still is a fairly small community. So if someone's been involved in franchise sales, you can pretty much find someone who knows him or her, who they've worked with in another brand. So, do your background checks, do your interviews, do your reference checks, kind of the same way you might do with an employee, and not just any employee, but a pretty high-level employee. So that's part of the vetting process. The next part is, is see whether they are a certified franchise executive. I mean, I've actually seen some clients who give their franchise sales staff a quiz periodically, and you can certainly do that as part of the interview process or part of the review process to see what do they know. I mean, do they know where the line is, and have they engaged in practices that may have crossed the line? They may not have gotten caught. And caught's probably too strong a word. There may not have been any adverse consequences because they didn't realize it and nothing bad happened. But do they know what they're doing? And so part of it is the interview process. And then, as we said, you know, talking to their references and then making sure that it's all laid out in a contract with them.
Yeah, and oh, Mark, it's interesting in some of those conversations that I referenced earlier with folks like you. I've heard on a couple of occasions where, and this seems very, very odd to me, because franchisors are really geared towards compliance, even if they're new franchisors, after they go through the process of creating a franchise agreement, developing a franchise disclosure document, and getting registered in some of the registration states. They kind of get into the mode of, you know, you got to dot I's and cross T's. But at the same time, they'll go out and get engaged with a broker network or an individual broker or some provider of franchise sales support and not bother to actually have the agreement reviewed with their own counsel. You know, making sure that things like indemnification and that exclusivity you mentioned earlier, or channel exclusivity, is in part of the agreement. It just seems very, very odd to me that people would dispense with their good judgment after going through the process of being compliant in other areas of their business and throw caution to the wind when they're engaging an outsourced provider.
I agree with you completely. It doesn't make sense, and I'm not saying this just because I'm a lawyer. I think in fairness to some franchisors, they may not realize what they're doing. It's not that they don't care. It's more that, I don't have to worry about this. I mean, it's a franchise sales force. They've been selling franchises for 10 years. They know what they're doing. And it doesn't. They don't realize what the potential harm is until something comes back to bite them, you know, when there's a lawsuit. And the lawsuits that occur, and I'm not saying there's a lot or that they're frequent, but if a franchise salesperson commits fraud or has a misstep, let's just say, you know, in June 2012, you usually don't hear about it until 2 years later, after the franchise has been sold, the franchisee is up and operating. It's now been a year. They're not doing as well as they thought they were going to do. Expectations are not met. And maybe there's a termination, or maybe they want to file a lawsuit. And all of a sudden, stuff comes out about what the franchise salesperson said 2 years earlier. Well, where is that franchise salesperson? He or she may no longer be with the broker network. They may no longer be at the company. You know, and so you don't really know about it until it's too far down the road. So my recommendation is before you sign any contract, understand what's in it. And the contract should be fair, but it should be clear as to what the franchise broker or salesperson is going to do and what the franchisor is expecting and what the franchisor is going to do. It's particularly important, as you mentioned, indemnification, because a franchise sales agent or broker, whatever he or she does, is a reflection on the franchisor. And if they commit a violation of law, the franchisor is liable, whether the franchisor knows about it or not. And so it's important that there be an indemnification, so that if there is a problem, sure, the franchisor is going to have this problem for a long time in terms of maybe damages, disclosure in the FDD, but in terms of monetary damages, they may be able to go after the franchise broker to be compensated.
So let's look at it this way. So if a third party or outsourced franchise sales provider crosses a line legally, you know, what are some of the potential consequences for the franchisor, and also, you know, what remedies might the franchise have with that non-compliant broker?
Okay, it's a good question. Let's assume, you know, they cross the line. Let's assume they give an unauthorized earnings claim. The consequences for the franchisor are a potential rescission of the franchise agreement, damages that could be paid. If the state gets involved, it could be civil fines. It could be, and then if that's an injunctive relief, you know, saying you can't do this again, and then these sorts of violations have to be disclosed in the FDD for the next 10 years. So it can be pretty ugly for what is a small violation. Those are the potential problems of the parade of horribles, and they are severe. What can the franchisor do to prevent that? Well, one may say, well, just don't hire brokers. Well, that's one way to go about it, but that doesn't really cure the problem, because the same problem, the same issue, the same comment that a franchise broker may make to a prospect, an in-house franchise salesperson could do the same thing, and the franchisor would still be liable. The way to go about it, as I said, is you know, prevention. You know, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, you know, if you train your people ahead of time and make sure that they know what they're doing, that's one way. The other way that may mitigate some of these potential problems, if the franchisor has a good compliance program and they can demonstrate that they had this program, that every broker and every in-house salesperson went through this program, that these people were CFEs, that they had knowledge, et cetera, and that this was just a slip-up or this was a mistake or this was a renegade franchise salesperson, it may help at various levels. It may help if there's a state inquiry and the state may not be as severe in terms of their penalties, and it may also help in terms of a lawsuit. You say, well, it's just a minor thing that occurred. The other thing is you don't want to let the franchise sales process completely out of your hands. And what I mean by that, let's assume you have franchise agents. At some point, the franchisor is going to want to meet with the prospect and explain the system and have them come for a discovery day and really make sure that the franchisor is really signing on to the right franchisee. Hopefully, if there's been a problem that has occurred in the franchise sales process, the franchisor can learn about that before you sign the franchise agreement. And there you really nip it in the bud before it becomes a problem. You may lose that franchise sale. You may end up having to say, well, you know, this guy told you something you weren't supposed to be told, and therefore we're not going to sell you the franchise. And you can say to us, well, we didn't believe it. It didn't, you know, we'll ignore that. There's a little bit, you know, you can try that a little bit, but it's really not the safest course. So there's one way to do it, like I said, is to nip it in the bud.
Yes, certainly. There's not many franchisors that would admit that they would walk away from a sale, and I don't think many would. So I think that's a very good advice that you give. You know, under the current FTC franchise rule, which, as we know, changed back in 2008, what are the franchisor's legal compliance requirements if they retain a broker? And which states have their own stipulations regarding the use of franchise brokers?
Okay. Yeah. To kind of set the stage for this, it used to be that before 2008, the FDD, or in those days what was called the UFOC, the Uniform Franchise Offering Circular, you had to disclose your officers and directors, and you also had to disclose third-party franchise brokers and sales agents. So you had to have a full bio in item 2 of the UFOC or FDD with your franchise sellers or franchise brokers. Under the new FTC rule, which has now been adopted by the states, you don't have to have that full-blown disclosure in the FDD. What you do have to say is if you are going to use a franchise broker, that you have to say we may use franchise brokers. So that's number one. And I'm going to come back to the term franchise seller in just a second. But then at the state level, most of the 14 franchise registration states require some sort of filing. There are two states that have specific franchise broker registrations. New York, and Washington. Illinois used to, but they got rid of it. Now, these are not, these are full blown, a lot of information about the franchisor, I'm sorry, about the franchise broker, about their network, about their net worth, et cetera. And those, that's New York and Washington. There are about 10 other states that require, or there are 10 of the registration states require franchise salesman registration. That is, would include if someone in your organization, an employee of a franchisor, is in franchise sales, you have to fill out a form. It's a couple pages. It's a, it's their name, rank, and serial number type of thing. You know, that where how long they've been working, what their employment experience is, if there's litigation, if there's a bankruptcy history. That what I'll call, what's called franchise salesman disclosure or salesperson disclosure. The states that have that are California, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Minnesota, New York, North Dakota, Rhode Island, and Washington. And so if you're engaged, if you've engaged a franchise development agent or franchise broker in those states, then you have to file a separate registration for them. It's a short form, so you have to file it. The thing that makes it burdensome, if you have a franchisor has retained a broker network, and that broker network has 100, 200, 300 franchise brokers, and they're able to sell franchises all across the country, the franchisor actually has to file those hundreds of pages of documents every year as part of their registration. It's incredibly burdensome. A few years ago, a number of states said this is just too much for us, and a few of the states actually stopped asking for some of these broker network filings, and then they said, no, I guess we really need it under law. So franchisors, if you have a network like that, you're going to have to file these forms. That's a downside. The upside is if you're dealing with a franchise broker network, they should have these forms because you're not their only franchisor. They should be giving out these forms to everyone who they represent. Now, let me just take a sidestep here. There is something called franchise sellers. Now, that was a new term that the FTC came up with in 2008. And I think I mentioned earlier, a franchise seller is the franchisor or any officer, director, employee, or third party who is involved in the franchise sales process. So it would include the vice president of development at the franchisor, but it also include a franchise broker. And the reason why franchise sellers are critical is that on the last page of the FDD, the acknowledgement of receipt or the receipt page, the franchisor has to identify which franchise sellers were involved in the particular offer of this franchise. Okay, so if all you have is one vice president of development or vice president of franchise sales, you put his or her name in the FDD, and away you go. It's in all of them. But what happens when you have 2 or 3 or 12 different franchise brokers that are working with you? Well, you're not going to put all their names in the item 23 receipt page. So what you're required to do is add those names when you give out the FDD. It becomes an administrative burden, but it's doable. And so one of the additional things as part of these rules is that if you have a franchise broker network, you have to make sure that whoever is involved in that franchise sale, he or she is identified on the receipt page of the FDD. Was there a follow-up?
You know,
did I answer all that question? I know I was talking for a while, but was there something else I think I may have forgotten to answer?
I think you got it. And what's interesting about the topic you brought up about the franchise seller and the acknowledgement receipt item 23 is it's kind of fact-dependent upon the process that the franchisor has. If you send out your FDD early on in the process and then it gets assigned to someone within the company, the receipt that you received may not have that person's name on it. But under the way I understand it, under the FTC guidance, is that you can always add those names as the process unfolds, or if you have a new hire, and make sure that the updated name on that receipt, a copy goes back to that prospect, and a copy ends up in the file. Am I right about that?
You're absolutely right, and it is dependent upon the process that a particular franchisor uses. I mean, I have some clients that actually have the receipt page has the name of someone in-house. And if they use a broker, they have the name and address of one of the brokers, and they have a couple extra lines. And so if the FDD is handed out to a prospect or is mailed to them, they'll fill that in. But you're absolutely right that if there's someone else that was involved, or maybe it was done electronically or someone else, you don't know, at a later date you can actually send them a letter that says, we just want to acknowledge that in addition to X, Y, and Z, Mr. C or Ms. D was involved in the franchise sale. I mean, I personally, and this is my own personal view, I think it's a silly requirement that if a prospect really doesn't know who they've met with. I mean, I think it's more of an issue of who do they meet with in case there's a problem and someone wants to go after that franchisor for fraud, misrepresentation, the state wants to do the same thing. There are other ways to get that information, but you know, I didn't write the FTC rule. I'm just opining on it.
Well, Mark, you know, Franchise Today and Paul and I are all about compliance, but this is one of those things that we've talked about and I've talked about with other people. It's sort of like this is one of those rules. If you fail to comply either on purpose or inadvertently, what's the consequence?
Well, on this one, I mean, in theory, the consequence is you've made an illegal sale. But I got to tell you, if that's the only problem that a franchisee has, it's a really tough case to make that you didn't give out the name of the individual who the prospect talked to. I mean, because it's not a truly static and isolated incident here. I mean, in most cases, the franchise sales process takes a while. There's more than one meeting. And, you know, there's follow-up letters and follow-up emails. And so what's a prospect going to do? Say, well, I didn't get Joe's name on my FDD, and therefore it's now 2 years down the road, and I want to rescind my franchise agreement. Now, and I'll do respect to you, John, you know, if you didn't get Joe's information and it turns out Joe, you know, is a convicted felon and you didn't know about it and you didn't know about things like that, okay, you know, that may be a fine argument to make. But for the most part, it's a lot of administrative hassle. And I think, to be honest, if that's the only claim a prospect has, that they didn't get the franchise seller's name on the FDD, it's a hard case to make.
Mark,
I'm not counseling people not to do it. I just want to say that, you know, but from a risk analysis, and that's, you know, you have to look at that.
Well, as we're winding down the stretch, we're on Franchise Today talking with Mark Kirsch, partner at Plave Cook. We're talking about franchise sales outsourcing. So let's just change direction a little bit and talk, as you talked about or mentioned earlier in the show, about area representation. So what is an area representative or area developer? And how does that structure fit into the franchise sales development process?
Okay, that's a good question. Here's another area where terms mean a lot of different things. In generally speaking, if you've got a franchisee who operates a single unit, that franchisee is a franchisee, and they sign a franchise agreement. And if you have someone that wants to develop and own and operate multiple units, that person is often called an area developer. But then there are some people who want to be a part franchisee owner, part developer, and part sales agent. And the term that is often used, or for a long time was used, was area representative. Sometimes franchisors call them development agents. Sometimes they call them master developers. Again, terminology is different. But what an area rep is someone who signs a signs an agreement with the franchisor and becomes the exclusive franchise sales person for that franchise company. And is heavily involved in the entire franchise sales, development, and in many cases, support and services function. So you find someone who has good contacts with, say, the Southwest region of the United States, and you sign an agreement, and that person may be a franchisee and may have the right to develop one or more units. But the area rep part of it is that they then go out and solicit new franchisees in their region. They do a lot of the vetting. They are the eyes and ears of the franchisor. They bring the franchisees back. And then when the franchisees sign an agreement with the franchisor, the area rep often does a lot of the pre-closing and post-opening post-closing of the deal, pre-opening and post-opening of the unit. So they may help with site selection. They may help with training. In fact, a lot of area reps actually have a training facility, and they may do ongoing support throughout the course of the franchise. And so they're really more than just a sales agent. They're more the field rep. What happens with an area rep, many cases the area representative or development agent pays a fee to the franchisor for the right to do this. So, and then going forward, they may split the initial fees between the area rep and the franchisor, and they may split the royalty fees that the franchisees pay. When you create this structure with the fees that are being paid to the franchisor and the other elements of the business, the area rep itself becomes a franchise. So it's quite possible that when you have an area rep or an area development agent, the franchisor is now granting two types of franchises. The franchise that most people think about at the single unit operator level, and then the franchise for an area rep. Area reps can be great, and there are a lot of systems where area reps have been very good and very productive in developing regions and areas of the country. The downside on some area reps is that some area reps are real good at sales, but not real good at servicing or support. And some area reps are good at servicing support, but not at sales. And they have their own internal conflicts about who they're going to bring in and what locations, et cetera. So, but it has been successful. There are a number of sandwich chains that have used them, and they've done well.
Mark, we have just a couple of minutes, and I think we'd be remiss in not at least touching on this last question. And so if you could answer it as concisely as possible.
Okay.
I know it's a big question. What do you think about the franchisors who pay a referral, say $5,000, $10,000, to their franchisees? And a two-part question real quick is the franchisor making their franchisees into franchise sellers? And specifically, what happens when that referring franchisee is in fact sharing their own P&Ls with the prospective franchisee to encourage them to buy?
That's a real good question. I think it's a good idea in the right system for a franchisor to offer a referral fee. If franchisees are sometimes the best source of referrals, they know people in the industry, and so a referral fee can be a good thing. They're really not making their franchisees franchise sellers. I mean, as long as all they're doing is referring, it's not the type of thing that the FTC is talking about. Although I always caution my franchisor clients that if you're going to have this sort of program, you definitely need to disclose that in the FDD. That if someone talks to a franchisee, they need to know that the franchisee could be getting some compensation. The real difficult part of this is when they're sharing their P&Ls. Does it become an earnings claim? And the answer, generally is no, but we can see ways in which it's a franchisee can cross the line. I guess that's a way to say it. And it's a way of, if I'm a franchisor, I'd rather have my franchisees give out information. Not that I tell them to give out, but to be honest and upfront with their prospective franchisees, because that's who's going to make the sale. Your franchisees are the ones who are going to help you sell franchises.
Well, I know that was a very hard question to answer in a couple of minutes, and I think we could do an entire show on some of that. Mark, I really appreciate the time. I know you're on the road in meetings, so I really appreciate the time that you took today and provided us some great information. Look forward to having you and other people from Plate Cook on in the future.
Well, it was my pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Joe, we're wrapping up our third week in our third annual Franchise Legal Series. Appreciate all your effort. Next week we'll have Warren Lee Lewis from Ackerman Centerfeet. We'll be on about franchise sales best practices. I look forward to that. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.